So this week was started with technical difficulties. Only my guests' audio got captured. I'm trying to run a commentary on them, but unfortunately I will have to edit out a lot of stuff. My first guest was Dennis Waldherr, aka Bytekeeper.
Hi, yes, my name is Dennis, as you mentioned. I started with a bot about a year ago, I think. After watching the video 3 months, I thought I can do it better. I can't. So here I am.
How the bots were called?
Well, the first one was called FTT something, and it lagged, and people asked me to delete it. I think I disabled it. Yeah, it's disabled, and the current bot is Styx, which works fine on SCAET, but it doesn't work in Bazel, sadly.
Here is Banana Brain's introduction.
Yes, I got interested in StarCraft a long time ago. It's one of the games of my youth. I played it a lot back then. And, well, quite recently, or more like 1.5 years ago, I found that you could actually make AIs for StarCraft. And I immediately found that very interesting, so I started working on it. And, well, after all this time, I think I made a quite nice bot. It worked out better than I expected.
Dave's introduction.
Yeah, I'm Dave Churchill. I run the AID StarCraft competition. I first started work in StarCraft AI early on in my PhD at the University of Alberta in 2010, and wrote UAlbertaBot with a bunch of other people for the first competition. And then Ben Weber, who ran the first competition, was graduating and asked if anyone wanted to take over running the competition. And so myself and Michael Burrow said yes, and we've been running it ever since. And I currently maintain UAlbertaBot and a bunch of other packages for StarCraft AI.
How do you feel about people using UAlbertaBot as a base for their bots?
It's really great, actually. I think that that gives me far more pleasure than doing well in the competition, is just seeing that it helps other people do research and write their own bots. And I was really happy when SIDA had used it this year. Yeah, I like to say that SIDA is what happens when you put UAlbertaBot in the same room as a bunch of South Korean pros.
What are your bets on this year's SCAIT?
I think if SIDA is entered, it will do very well. Is Cherry Pie entered into?
I think it did.
Yeah, I know that their full bot requires GPU computation, so I'm not sure if it's supported there.
Is Crazio entering?
I think it did. I think it did.
Yeah, well, I haven't been in touch with Ekkheid, I think, about a month or two now, but the general plan is for him to finish an interface which is compatible to BW Mirror. And then I think the plan is to add the object-oriented API on top of it. I don't think he will help me there, and I don't know if I will do it at all, because most bots are compatible with Mirror, so I guess it might just be wasted time.
One of BW API4j's goals was to be a drop-in replacement for BW Mirror. There is a branch which kind of accomplished that, and that's what I'm using for my bot.
Yeah, I think it's working, but the way we designed it has also some problems, because we actually use the same approach as JNI BW used, which is transferring the bunch of data to Java and not let the client make calls, JNI calls here before. So I would have to ask him how far is. But you said you tested it already?
UAlbertaBot is C++, right?
Yes, UAlbertaBot has been in C++ since it started.
And Banana Brain is also C++, right?
Yes, that's correct, C++. But not from... Well, I started out the bot in Java using BW Mirror. but I ran into the limitations of mostly of Java, because I couldn't get it fast enough. I was doing something with pathfinding, and it seemed to be too slow. And I also thought it was a disadvantage that I did not have access to PREM, Prunchbar Easy Map. So at that point, I decided to switch to C++ to completely port my bot from Java to C++. That's about half a year of development on Java. I think 1 year of development on C++ now.
But you started out with Steamhammer, didn't you?
I started from scratch with only, well, the C++ version, only Prunchbar Easy Map, no other libraries.
Oh, nice.
What are your reasons for picking the language?
When I picked it, it was the only available option, and I really like C++, so that's why I picked it for UAlbertoBot.
And the same question to Bytekeeper.
Yeah, I'm a Java developer by trade, and I programmed C++, I think, 20 years ago a bit, but I just can't warm up to the language.
I think it's important to have many languages to be able to develop in. One of the goals of mine is to update the tutorial on the SSCIT page, because it's quite outdated right now.
Keeping tutorials up to date is very time consuming, I've found.
But sometimes just as important.
Yeah. I usually like a demo bot a little bit better. I think an example bot would be very nice, because it would work out of the box without following the steps.
But sometimes just as important.
So it depends what part of academia you're in, I think. I think that as a student, it's almost perfect for getting involved in StarCraft AI programming, because it's a very hot topic right now, and so it's very easy to publish if your results are good. And the Brewboar API allows you full control of the game engine. So let's say you want to do research in build order planning or in micromanagement. It's very easy to make a system that actually allows you to carry out experiments in those exact areas. So you could, for example, take a working bot and replace the build order system with what your current research is, and then you can test your bot against, you know, the same tournament that ran with the old system, and then say, okay, our system must be better or worse because of this. And so I think that it's for students, it's a really great test environment for AI. And in academia, you have a lot of freedom to work on problems that you're really interested in, that you and your supervisor like. And so I honestly think it's StarCraft AI programming is perfect for students in academia. I think the one thing that has kind of changed in the last few years is that now there's a lot of big companies working on StarCraft AI, either StarCraft II or Brood War. And so whereas a lot of the really good bots used to come from academia or hobbyist programmers, I think that may be changing now that there's a lot of money being thrown into StarCraft AI. And so with the research moving to a lot of big companies, a lot of the research now, because they're at companies, is becoming closed source. And so I think that's a shift away from academia that's not so great, where some companies are open sourcing their research, but some aren't. And so I think the really top end research now is becoming a little more closed source than it used to be. And so that's a little disappointing, but you know, if they're putting so much money into it, of course they want to guard their secrets. And the other side is now that I'm actually in the faculty side of academia, I think it's still a great environment, but I personally don't get a lot of time now to actually program things, since I'm busy with teaching and other things. But I still think that it's a really great motivator for students when you're saying that you're going to be working on StarCraft AI. And so I think it's really great. I couldn't imagine a better system for motivating students and doing research than the Brewboar API and the StarCraft II API.
So let's put this to the test. Question to my other guest, how often do you read papers about StarCraft AI?
I read them rarely, not very often.
Well, actually, I don't actually read only StarCraft related things, because I think there might be some other fields in AI or computer science that might help me with a bot. But honestly, I don't understand everything.
A lot of mathematical symbols and stuff like that can be uninteresting.
I think if I can just add that a lot of the academic papers in StarCraft AI are not directly applicable to bot programming, because they're more theoretical, or they're working in systems that aren't necessarily the full game. And so you may read like some algorithm like we published on micromanagement, but that is, you can't actually implement that in the bot yet, because maybe you don't have a model, or it's just not fast enough yet to put in the bot. And so I think it's much more productive for people just getting into bot programming to actually actively avoid reading academic publications in StarCraft AI.
Yeah, well, the funny thing about most papers is there is the mathematical stuff and the symbols, but in most StarCraft-related papers, there's also an algorithm section, and there is mostly pretty easy to understand what they're doing.
Question for Dave. Did you work with software companies outside of academia?
So in the past, I did some consulting with Facebook AI research on some Brood War AI related things. And then, of course, I was a while ago, I was consulting with Blizzard and DeepMind on the StarCraft 2 API. So it was nice to kind of see from the inside how they are doing their research and development, and what it's like when you actually get a team of professional developers working on something rather than just one lowly student working on things. And that was a really cool thing to see. And I still talk to them from time to time, but I'm not actively doing anything with them right now.
Let's talk about some programming challenges and difficult problems you have encountered when writing your bot.
Well, the pathfinding is difficult. Not really because pathfinding itself is difficult, but I noticed that when I added it, my bot started lagging a lot, like taking 1 second for a frame. So making it in such a way that it doesn't lag too much, that's the challenge in this case.
What kind of algorithm is it?
Well, it's basically just what's called breadth first search. But I have to tune some parameters, such as the grid size, that kind of things. When deciding which target a unit will attack. So it will find the position to which a unit can walk to get as close to the enemy as possible, and see which enemies are reachable. And the grid I now settled for is like 16 pixels per cell. That's fast enough. Some parameter tuning.
What kind of grid are we talking about?
That the grid I settled on was 16 by 16 pixels cells. This was fast enough. I wanted to make grid smaller, but then it became too slow.
Yeah, I think you have about 30 milliseconds for a frame, and that's not quite enough for calculating everything.
I believe you had more than 30 milliseconds per frame in general.
The Brood War runs at 24 frames per second. So it's 42 milliseconds per frame. In the aid competition, we give 55 milliseconds per frame just to give an extra few milliseconds for latency and things like that.
Same question to Bytekeeper. Tell us about the programming hardships you have encountered.
Yeah, well, I struggled mostly with my own design. But one of the major problems was the decision when to attack. Not only when to attack, but also where to attack. I think the where to attack is not solved by anyone at the moment, but the decision on should I attack or should I back off, it's always difficult to see it in even the top bots. And I started out with some very crude heuristics, because I didn't want to write a simulator later I switched to JFAB, but I wasn't really, well, it worked well, but not good enough for me, so I wrote S, which is mostly compatible, I think, to JFAB. I'm happy with it, but I started Bazel afterwards and didn't have time to actually continue using it in my bot and improve it.
Did you implement some cheese in your bot, which is very important?
Well, not directly, but I think my bot does some cheesy stuff if it's attacked correctly. I try to use a huge tree, a huge behavior tree with some dispatching inside, and there are some strange conditions in there which, if you trigger them, can result in some very strange things.
How about Banana Brain?
Well, of course, I have the proxy gate. I think that counts as cheese.
And finally, Dave, tell us about your problems.
Yeah, there's there were dozens of problems. I think, well, I wrote a paper about this specific topic, which was, it's called, I'm not trying to plug my papers, but just in case anyone wants to read it, it's Incorporating Search Algorithms into RTS Agents, which I go into excruciating detail about, like, the frame-by-frame problems you have with controlling units in Brood War, specifically things like Dragoons and Hydralisks, in which you issue an attack command, and you assume that, hey, that Dragoon will go and attack that thing. But it turns out that if you issue another move command less than 7 frames after an attack command, then the Dragoon will stop. And if you do it on the perfectly bad frame, then it will not only stop, but its cooldown will be activated, and so now it can't shoot for another 20 frames or something like that. So just deciphering what it is Brood War is actually doing and programming around that has always been the most annoying thing about Brood War programming, to me at least. But on the technical side, one problem that I enjoyed trying to get around was in the build order search system, we're using a depth first branch and bound algorithm to actually search for build order. And so I wanted to give it enough time to come up with a good build order, but that's far longer than the amount of milliseconds that are available per frame. And so I was thinking, okay, do I put the search in another thread, or how do I do this? And I wanted to keep it single threaded. And so what I ended up doing was, instead of multi-threading the search, I just staggered the search so it does a little bit of search every frame. And so the bot's sort of commander tells the search algorithm, hey, you have this much time left on this frame for search. And so the way that it starts and stops the search is that it's a depth first search algorithm. But what I ended up doing was implementing my own stack and using a bunch of go-to calls to emulate recursion. And so by doing that, I can actually start and stop the search with no overhead. And I thought that was a really cool technical problem, and I liked that solution. So it can search, if I give it like 2 seconds total to search, then it will do that like 30 milliseconds per frame at a time. And then at the end, it will return the build order.
Aren't you afraid that the Velociraptors will take you if you use go-to statements?
Yeah, my supervisor at the time had a laugh at that. But sometimes when you want to do something unconventional, then you have to use the unconventional mechanisms in the programming language. And so I couldn't use return statements. So you had to like emulate return statements with GoTo and like record where you are in the actual recursive search and then get there with GoTo. So it was fun, but it's a very quick way to shoot yourself in the foot if you don't go through a lot of testing.
You also wrote BOSS, which I completely confused with another thing, a BOS in Torchcraft.
Yeah, it ended up working really well, and I've seen since some, there's a blog article on Jay Scott's, the satirist website, about getting rid of BOSS in the bot, and other people have said, you know, oh, like, BOSS is terrible because it only searches for like the time, the minimum time to build something. It doesn't like build any intermediary defenses and stuff. But I think it's funny because, you know, that was written in 2011, and I'm really surprised that it's still being used. Yeah, it's I remember when we started, we were using with the first version of UAlbertaBot, it used BWSAL, I think, for the build orders, but we found it didn't have a lot of flexibility. And our main reason for writing BOSS is, well, A, we wanted to do the research on the build order planning, but I also wanted to do it on a topic that was sort of small enough to actually have code in the bot. And so, for example, the micromanagement algorithms we wrote still are not fast enough to be in the bot, but the build order stuff was fast enough. And so that was a big motivating factor, is to actually have a search algorithm that works in a bot that's doing decently in a competition. So that was the motivation there.
I think the saying applies here that perfect is the enemy of good. All right, another topic. You also wrote a combat simulator called Sparkcraft.
Yeah, so Sparkcraft, in, I think it was 2012, before Sparkcraft, UAlbertaBot had this, what I want to call like a one-dimensional combat simulator that a guy named Sterling Orston wrote. So he and I rewrote the bot completely in 2012 from scratch, because the previous versions were written by this large group of people, mostly undergrad students who didn't deliver what they had promised. And so we rewrote it, and he wrote this thing where it would essentially just take all the firepower of one group of units and hit points and all the firepower of another group of units and just sort of assume that they were right next to each other, and who will win if they just take this priority sequence of attacking the other units and they're all within attack range. And that actually worked pretty well, but we found that in the actual game, oftentimes, especially if you're using Protoss, like where we were at the time, it often favors melee units when you do that sort of thing, because they're almost never in attack range. And so you really do need to factor the movement time into account. And so when we were doing the algorithms for combat, we needed a simulator that took that sort of geometry into account. And so it doesn't take collisions into account, but it does take positions into account. And so that's how that came about. And I guess bots that used UAlbertaBot since then, some of them have used Sparkcraft, but it's really, really inaccurate in the late game. And so unless you're a complete cheese bot like UAlbertaBot, then using it is actually really bad in the late game. So I know a bunch of people have turned it off, but I assume that some people still do use it.
I have to mention it that we also made something called Sparkcraft. A good friend of mine made it with my little contribution. You have to know that Spar is a retail chain in Eastern Europe, and we made a game in RPG Maker 2000 when you had to steal from the shop and avoid the security guards. You can be with the security guards as well.
That's really funny. So Sparkcraft, that system, it was actually out for more than a year before it was called Sparkcraft, and it didn't really have a name. It was just like a combat simulation system. And one of the things that I realized early on with that is that once you give something a clever name, people will start using it, no matter how good or bad it is. So unfortunately, that's like human nature. And if you give something kind of a cute or memorable name, people will use that more than something that may actually be better. And so make sure you give things good names when you write software projects.
I tend to just give stuff the stupidest or simplest names I can think of because I can't be bothered, hence Jumpy Dog GoBot. Does Banana Brain use any kind of combat simulator?
No combat simulator. The reason I don't use one is because of the indecisiveness. I'm afraid that the combat simulator will give different answers within frames. So one frame it says you're winning, and the next frame it says you're losing. And then the army would just move back and forth, and I did not want that. Also, there's no, until now, there's no point that I actually thought I needed a combat simulator. I just use a supply amount to guess if I'm strong enough to attack.
That was a real big problem with StarCraft as well, is you get that sort of threshold behavior and the oscillating behavior of like walking in one pixel, and now it says it's going to lose instead of win, and so it walks out, and then on that pixel it thinks it's going to win instead of lose, and so it walks in. And so when we were looking at this, I think we decided on something like, okay, if you decide to attack, you're not allowed to decide otherwise for another 10 seconds or something like that. And that really helped with that behavior.
I at the beginning, I used a little bit different approach. I assumed my units would be at the enemy already. So when moving in, the units didn't actually change position, and it took a while longer for them to retreat.
Another thing I didn't see implemented at all is purposefully suiciding into enemy units.
It's really a major detail to implement something like that. I think most bots have enough to handle to actually manage the macro management or micro a bit, and this kind of behavior is very detailed.
Yeah, it's really not an easy problem, quite the opposite.
That's the type of problem that requires sort of deeper vision into the overall strategy of the game. And that's something that current AI is not great with, is these sort of goals that, like, the short-term goal may be kill the units, but the long-term goal of sacrificing a unit might be, okay, well, at least I killed that expansion, and that's really good. But building that into the evaluation function of the combat simulator is incredibly difficult because, you know, you can't just write a function that decides whether or not it's better to kill an expansion versus save those units. It's just such a hard problem to decide on.
It also depends on your opponent model, because sometimes it's very good to kill the expansion, and sometimes the enemy won't even notice it.
Let's talk about another topic, tournaments, and in that Basil, Bitekeeper, as the owner, author, sole proprietor of Basil, would you mind saying a few words about it?
Yeah, I noticed that after sale went down, that people really liked it, and I was hoping it went back up, but it didn't for a long time. I actually didn't want to do something like that on my own, because it's a huge amount of work. But one day I don't know, I was annoyed from bot, and I thought I'm doing something else which is related. So I started it, and it was also a nice project to test the SC Docker, because I don't think it was used very widely. It had some problems, and it was really nice. I think I fixed most of them. Well, Not my Graves problems. I hope you will help me with that.
My Graves bots problems, you mean?
Yeah, I don't know. It might be a problem with his inside his bot, but it might also be a problem with Docker or Wine.
Yeah, the joke is that it's his personal problem, not his bots. Sorry, my Grave.
Well, it depends. I mean, he's on so often, I think it's... You could also say it's a personal problem.
Let's leave poor MacRave alone. How much time did you spend with setting up Basil?
I think it took about 4 or 5 days to get to the point to publish something, but it wasn't working very well. I think 40% of the games were crashes, and the statistics didn't work. And I used a different ELO rating than our beloved SCIT uses. So I restarted it a little bit later with the correct ELO calculation. And I think now it's working pretty good, actually. One or two crashes in half an hour, it's okay, I think.
How difficult would it be to set it up something like that again, like the same thing but with different map pool?
I don't think it would be very difficult. It's you download the Java application. It's a Spring Boot application for those Java developers out there, which are also in the business of writing EEWE software. Very, very good stuff. and it also needs a Postgres, a database. Actually, I use Postgres for that. And then the rest, you obviously need to install SCBW Docker, my version, because it also supports older BW API. And I disabled the shared memory, if I remember correctly, because that killed all old JNI BW API bots. But it should actually be pretty easy. You won't get the web interface because I'm abusing GitHub as a host.
I'm actually a Java AE developer, so this would be right up my alley. All right, Dave, can you say a few words about AID?
Sure. If I can, you were just talking about the ladder. I've had two undergrad students working on a ladder version of AID as well. And so that should be up, hopefully, in the first quarter of 2019, is a 24/7 AID ladder. They've just modified the current tournament manager software to add a website to it where you can upload your bots, and that should be working soon. I know it's been in development for a while, but yeah, hopefully we'll have a ladder as well. But the tournament itself, if you want to go way back to when it started, I think 2009 was really when Brood War API, people started using it a lot. I think the development had started in 2008. But then Ben Weber, who was at UC Santa Cruz, decided to have the first competition. And so he ran the first competition with AID because he was involved with that conference. So that's the AI and Digital Entertainment Conference. And so he ran the first competition on two laptops, manually setting up all the games, running all the games, and I think there were, I can't remember, like close to 20 entries, and so he did a double elimination tournament with random pairings. And the finals of that competition was the Berkeley Overmind Zergbot versus Crazio. So he's been programming since the very beginning as well. And the first version of UL Bertabot there was Zerg and didn't do very well. So, like I said previously, Ben was graduating. He was finishing his PhD that year, and so he didn't want to keep running the competition, but asked, "Hey, is there anyone who wants to take this over?" And myself and Michael Burrow at the U of A decided to take it over, and we hired an undergrad student to start writing the tournament manager software for us, because we knew that we wanted to play thousands of games and we didn't want to do that by hand. And so we started writing some Java software that had a server and a bunch of clients. And so the server would schedule the games and the clients would run the games and report the games back to the server. And that's sort of been in development ever since. And, so yeah, it was run at the University of Alberta from 2011 to 2016. And then I graduated in 2016 and started a job where I am now at Memorial University. And I asked Michael if he wouldn't mind if I took the competition with me, because I had been doing a lot of the work on it. And he said, okay. And so now it's run here in Newfoundland.
Humble beginnings.
Yeah, definitely. And I've personally strived to keep the competition as open source, because I think that that's the most important part of the AID competition, is that we are, you know, really focusing on advancing the state of the art. And so, for example, you know, the Saida bot, they wanted to enter and they were asking if it has to be open source, and I said yes, and we kind of went back and forth on that a little bit, but they eventually agreed, and so now we have, like, you know, a really great bot from Samsung and a really great bot from Facebook and from other authors, and they're all open source that people can take and modify and submit in future years. And so I've always the AID competition will never not be open source as long as I keep running it. So
think that's a great approach when speaking about a research environment. About the ladder, what kind of bots will it support?
So the ladder should support any type of bot that the aid competition supports. And so we will have, I actually got a grant from DeepMind. They very generously gave us some money for hardware. And so I will have two nice server machines that will be completely dedicated to this. So like one 7940X processor with like 28 cores or 14 cores, 28 threads, I think. So that should be able to run between 6 and 8 virtual machines pretty comfortably. And then another machine for GPU bots. So to do the latter, we're actually modifying the tournament manager software. And so we added a website. The website is already done. It's just not public, where you can log in and create an account and upload your bot and then, you know, disable other versions of the bot, et cetera. On the website, you'll be able to get the replays. We're using, I believe, Node.js for the server of the website, and that talks to a MongoDB database because, I don't know, we all like JSON. It's pretty nice. I'm not a professional database developer by any means, but I just thought, since the results of the competition are already in JSON, why not just store them in JSON with MongoDB? It will also help the competition, because one of the time-consuming parts of the aid competition is actually accepting all the bots manually by hand, compiling them, and testing them before the tournament starts. And so with this ladder, we should be able to just say, okay, anyone who has submitted to the ladder, you can just mark yourself as in the competition, and then it will sort of be automatic. But the ladder itself will be accepting closed source binaries for bots, but the competition will not. Yeah, it will run games the exact same way as the tournament. So ideally, we will have thousands of games per day, just like the aid competition. It will be played at fastest speed with like set for local frame zero. And so as fast as the StarCraft bots can run is as fast as the games will
be. Will it be a headless display or just running games as games are run?
No. One of the major design choices in any tournament manager software is that, like, do you go headless? Do you use like OpenBW? Do you use StarCraft? And so early on, we decided that, hey, StarCraft is a game that was programmed to run in Windows with graphics on. And so we kept that philosophy. And so the tournament and the ladder will both run in Windows 10 virtual machines, running the full version of the software. So each bot will be given a virtual machine, and it will connect to another bot running on another virtual machine, also in Windows. So it will be like the full StarCraft, no headless.
Do you plan to broadcast games like on the SSCIT website?
I don't currently have plans to do that, because the games are played at an extremely fast speed. And so, you know, the games would be over in a matter of minutes. But that's not to say that I couldn't just fire up OBS on one of the machines. But I wouldn't really want to disturb that network, because with so many games being played in parallel, if you constantly have like this 10 megabit upload to Twitch, then that may actually be bad for latency. So I'd prefer to keep accuracy of results over entertainment value.
Last cast, I was joking about a continuous integration system where you can just upload your bot and it forwards it to every tournament. Might be a use case here.
Well, that would be pretty cool, actually. But yeah, we won't be streaming the games, but because of the OpenBW, the replay site, we can just have it so, like, the last 100 games or something, you could click a link and just watch it in the browser.
Will you store all the replays?
Yeah, we will store all the replays, but just because of, you know, this piles up, we definitely get more than a gigabyte of replays a day when we run the tournament, and so we can't offer all of those for download all the time, but we may go through and say these were the replays for this week or something like that and offer a big download. But the last X games where X is less than 1,000 will be available instantaneously on the website. And ideally, we will also have a feature where when you log in and you have your landing page for your bot, you'll just be able to click a button and download all the replays for your bot. But, we're waiting to implement that functionality until after it's up and running and bug tested.
Let me ask my other guest, what are your opinions on this tournament or tournaments?
Yes, I think it's a very exciting idea to have that because, currently I'm running SE Docker simulations at my local computer and it's taking a lot of time and my computer is making a lot of noise while doing it. The fan is constant. So it would be nice if I could just upload my bot to the ladder and have it play versus the other ones.
I also like the idea. Obviously I'm not sure if I will keep Bessel running after it's on, but I don't know yet. I might still keep it on. Currently it's the only ladder that's working, and I think Banana Frame is also very very good at, in it already. But and I also have to agree that the number of replays and the disk usage is actually more than I expected. It's not quite a gig a day for me, but around 700 MB, I think. But I also will run out of space in on my internet server at some point in the near future.
One of the advantages of academia you were talking about before is free electricity. So it's nice to be able to run this.
You should just mine bitcoins then.
Someone on campus tried that once and they got in a lot of trouble.
I'm actually not so worried about the electricity because I don't allow GPU usage, just CPU, and I don't believe it's the most costly factor in that. I think the machines you got there are quite expensive and you can buy a lot of chews instead.
With this many replays, it's a great opportunity for data mining, although I'm not aware of any replay analyzing software.
Oh, actually, there's a GitHub repository where someone already uploaded a lot of replay data mining, but not only enough from bots, but from professional players, which is also quite interesting.
Cool, I did not know that.
Facebook AI research also analyzed a bunch of human replays and put them in a really nice database format where they take the replays and they have Torchcraft, which is their machine learning package for Brood War. And so they took those replays and parsed them into the Torchcraft format. So you actually don't need to run StarCraft to parse the replays. It's all in a nice binary format of frame data. So that's really nice too. But your question specifically is, it's great to have a lot of data, but I think that in the competition, the bot competitions, there's a lot of repeated data. A lot of the scripted bots, when they play against each other, even if they play against each other 100 times, 90 of those games may be almost identical. And so I don't know if your data set, even though it's tens of thousands of games, how many of those games are actually unique and teach you something. I'm not sure.
And not every bot is useful.
Yeah, I've heard there's a few bots that don't play StarCraft.
Come again?
I was joking. I just said there's a few bots that don't do the right thing all the time, and so you may not want to.
I don't believe you.
I think that on the replay side of things, I know this is more about Brood War, but it's really exciting to have all the StarCraft 2 replays available as well, because those are labeled human data, sorry, human replays, and they're labeled with the skill level on the StarCraft 2 ladder. And so you can say, okay, this was two diamond level players at this Elo, and it's really nice to have that data, because a bunch of bots playing against each other, you may not have a sort of skill ranking for those bots, but human data is always better, I think, for training.
Say that bots are doing their best. Don't hurt the bot.
Well, I think that there's this classical problem in supervised learning when you're learning from any sort of training set. And so if you're generating data with a function, then essentially what you're learning is that function. And so if you are learning from bot games, and those bot games are essentially scripted rules, then what you are learning is scripted rules. And so is that really helping you get to a better state of StarCraft AI? I don't know. And so I think that learning from replays is great for some things, like you could, you know, data mine for like state evaluations or build orders and things like this. But in terms of saying, I'm going to learn my actual strategic policy from these bot replays, I think that that may not be good. And I think that sort of a self-play reinforcement learning solution may be a lot.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we have today. Thank you for being on the show and see you next time.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks.
Thanks.